The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. Regional Roundup with Leslie Lopez, regional correspondent with the Straits Times on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3, you're in the breakfast huddle with Elliot Danker and Manisha Tank. Ryan will be back with some finance headlines just after half past the hour.
Time to take a look at all things around the region and helping us out, Straits Times regional correspondent Leslie Lopez. Leslie, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Elliot? Morning, Manisha.
Not too bad. It's been an exciting week and a half so far, huh?
Yeah, it really has.
Okay, Malaysia first. And I understand over there, of course, we read in the papers, biggest ever budget table on Friday. And among some of the things, there was a proposal to raise the ceiling of the COVID-19 fund, distribute cash aid worth 6.5 billion ringgit, and of course, allow those in the low-income group to defer loan payment for 3 months.
Yeah, but the opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim and the UMNO MP Najib Razak have said that politicians might not support Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin's budget if the government doesn't make changes to it. You know, obviously the wider context of this is something we've been speaking about over the last few weeks, isn't it? Which is, does this end up being validation of the Prime Minister or not? And also whether or not any of these changes will actually be implemented.
You're right. You know, there's much criticism against the budget, and it's not just Mr. Anwar, but also MPs who are supporting the Muhyiddin government. And yesterday, we had the chief debater for the government, former Prime Minister Najib Tun Razak, who actually also sounded a warning that unless changes are made, the budget would not find support from among the MPs, you know, from both sides across the aisle. You know, MPs have attacked certain controversial allocations directed at political propaganda departments. It stressed that the amount set for the COVID fight was too little. But they also, I mean, like you mentioned, they want the moratorium on loans to be extended for another 3 months. I mean, I think it is very clear that the opposition MPs and also some who are ostensibly supporting Mr. Muhyiddin are trying to make this as difficult as possible for the PM. And any rescaling of this budget would expose weaknesses on part of the government. And, you know, this, that would only mean it will hold the government to ransom further down the road for further votes, you know, down the line. So all this suggests that this political paralysis is going to continue, you know, until, you know, some kind of certainty is brought in, either in the form of, you know, a date on fresh elections or something like that.
Wow, this is going to run and run, yeah. Huh, Leslie?
Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah, keep you busy. Okay, let's pivot to something slightly different in Malaysia. The state-owned energy giant Petronas is expected to pay the state of Sabah 1.25 billion ringgit in sales tax next year.
I'm quite curious about this, Leslie. I mean, when you consider that Sabah and Sarawak, they hold much of the nation's oil and gas reserves. I mean, what is this? Is there implications on other states, or could this perhaps hurt Petronas even further? I mean, it's already suffering its first loss in, what, 5 years, second quarter of this year?
You're right. You know, this is a serious problem. And partly because, or largely because, PM Muhyiddin agreed to this payment to Sabah because of politics. This was, you know, part of a deal as when he and his allies pushed during the elections in that Borneo state a couple of months ago. And yes, you're right, also, because it's going to embolden other states, not just neighboring Sarawak, but also Terengganu, which is another gas-producing state in the east coast of Peninsula Malaysia, to make similar demands against a weak and embattled Muhyiddin government. But the big question, like you pointed out, is how does Petronas, that's being squeezed financially, meet these demands? And this isn't going to be good because Petronas is one of the largest issuers of bonds in international markets. Mm. This kind of political pressure is surely to test investment appetite for Malaysian paper, and that in turn, should it hurt its international ratings, just spells for more economic problems, you know, for the country. So we really need to watch this one pretty closely.
All right. Another one that I've been watching quite closely is the elections over in Myanmar. I mean, everyone was paying attention to the US one, but hey, the ruling National League for Democracy, they won enough votes to form the government. Of course, people took the polls on Sunday.
Yeah, so when we look at the results, Leslie, do they highlight a real patience amongst the people there for the NLD and, of course, the leader, Aung San Suu Kyi? All of that given the anti-Rohingya rhetoric?
Well, you know, I think it's not so much patience for the NLD or Aung San Suu Kyi, but rather a reflection of the commitment to having democracy take root in the country. And this is positive. You know, this is the second election in decades, and it was not only was there strong voter turnout, we saw a wide cast of parties competing. As many as 87 parties competed in these elections. Many were ethnic parties. Others were from parties founded by those who had been previously close to the NLD and also Ms. Aung San Suu Kyi, but who had broken away from her. So I think, you know, there's a lot of voter enthusiasm, but, you know, it's a long way to go. Sunday's polls, I think there was something like 1.5 million among the electorate of 37 million that were excluded. You know, and last month, ethnic minorities living in conflict zones also were not allowed to vote because of security reasons. I think all of this are bumps that need to be ironed out. But clearly, there is commitment to having democracy take hold after so many years of military rule. So it's an ongoing process for this.
Leslie, quick follow-up on that, if you don't mind. How big a bum is the military-backed opposition asking viewers of a video that they put up, the Union Solidarity Development Party, this video calling for people to send in evidence of illegal acts because they're trying to pursue legal options with regard to these elections, but there's no evidence so far?
So far, there's no evidence. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, given the nature in Myanmar, they would try to suppress it. But I think you're going to see, because there's so many parties, so many people contesting, you're going to see a very aggressive bid to actually bring all of this and make things more transparent.
Right.
So, like we said, you know, it's an ongoing process for Myanmar, but there is, you know, this commitment for democracy to take hold, and that's a good sign.
Okay, Leslie, let's move to Indonesia. The trade minister there says he expects the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, which, of course, is the world's biggest trade pact. It involves 15 countries in the Asia-Pacific, doesn't it? It's to be signed this weekend. How will that deal boost the region's trade relations?
Well, you know, I think this is going to be very key at a time when, you know, all countries are still, you know, grappling with the adverse effects of the COVID crisis. Coming to some kind of agreement to boost regional trade is going to be very, very important, especially like for economies like Singapore and, you know, and Indonesia too, you know, that need outside investment. So clearly assigned, if countries can come together at this point in time, kind of drop down nationalistic issues, look more towards regional trade, is going to have a very important impact if we are going to come out of the slump, actually, caused by the crisis.
Yeah, we need good news now more than ever.
Absolutely. You know? And yeah, speaking of which, Leslie, let's head over to the Philippines. The economy there shrinking 11.5% in the third quarter. More's expected all of that as the country imposed one of the longest and strictest lockdowns.
Yeah, I suppose. But then, Leslie, if you look at GDP, right, it grew a seasonally adjusted 8% quarter on quarter in the July to September period. So that was when the government was gradually lifting restrictions from the middle of May to help ease the economy. So we've seen a lot of this, even in Indonesia, sort of like a back and forth to help the economy. But right now, though, with this one, with this latest news, is it a sign that the Philippines economy is on the mend? I mean, is it fair to assume the worst is over?
You know, much as I think I would like to say that the worst is over, I think it's still too early to say. Optimism comes from signs of pickup in economic activity, along with, you know, moderating inflation, that in turn eases the pressure on the central bank to provide more monetary support. That's always a good thing, you know, when the central bank doesn't have to intervene aggressively. You know, they've already cut benchmark interest rates by, you know, something like 175 basis points this year, and they've launched you know, 165 billion peso worth of emergency relief. All of this puts pressure on the national budget. But, you know, still, having said all of this, the economy is still poised for a full year contraction, you know, as it struggles to get the, you know, effects of the virus under control.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're looking at the economy to shrink as much as 6.9% in 2020. So still some ways out of this, you know, the woods. And we just hope that, you know, this is a sign, but I think it's still too early to say. We can see things, like you said, you know, move back and forth. And all it takes is just another stumble and, you know, we're back in the same situation of trying to get out of this crisis.
Yeah, yeah. So much fragility. We've been speaking with Straits Times regional correspondent Leslie Lopez. Leslie, as always, we really appreciate your time. Take care and stay safe, yeah?
Thank you, Manisha.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.